Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers from the 48-yard line. Second down, 13. Brady lobs one downfield. Caught, ball by Gronkowski. Inside the 20, to the 15, 10. Gronkowski to the 5, to the 4-yard line. Holy guacamole.
Third down, 18. Dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon. Throws up the middle. And it's intercepted at the 30. Derrick Brooks, 30. Brooks to the 25, 20. Derrick Brooks all the way. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you're listening to the Cannon Fire Podcast.
Cannon Fire Podcast, brother! You ain't listening, and you're missing out. Woo! Go, go, go.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. Back at you today for episode 202. It is the mailbag episode, a formula that, you know, we've used before. A mailbag show is nothing new, but I think with this season, we are definitely going to try and work it into our regular schedule as we approach three shows a week. Social media. And welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always, Rhett Matthew, joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host, the Philly Bucks.
Raiders and the Ravens last night, and a crazy game, but yeah, it finally feels like football is back in full swing, so let's ride.
How do you think James is feeling with his fantasy team right about now? What were his quarterbacks again? He had Ryan Fitzpatrick as his starter, I think.
Correct.
Zach Wilson and Derek Carr.
Correct.
On his
Correct.
Bench, and I'm sure we can only guess who he tried to start this week, right?
I mean, yeah, it's just comical. He doesn't even try. It's It's shameful. He shouldn't really play fantasy football. He also had Jamal Williams on his bench, and he was bragging to me that Jamal Williams got 30 points, and I was like, okay, he's on your bench, so why are you bragging to me?
He's like, oh, I know, but it's, you know, it's great because it's good strategy for me because now I know I can start him next week.
Just thinks every guy's going to do that every week.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah,
if you do it once, you can do it again. So now, yeah, he's going to start Derek Carr when Derek Carr's going into Pittsburgh against the Steelers defense. So that'll be fun.
Well, his starting quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, went down with injury. The Washington football team actually placed him on IR today.
That's why a good thing he has three.
Yeah, it is a good thing he has three. So I guess it was a little bit of a contingency plan there from him. So, I mean, in a way, I guess we have to kind of give him his props on that.
I'm not giving him any props on that, but you know, it's, and then he's also going to have a rookie, Zach Wilson, who just lost a starting tackle. So that's always a positive. You know, you when a rookie loses his starting tackle, that's when you know you got a keeper. So.
Oh man. Well, with Fitzmagic going down and Washington putting him on the reserve today, let's talk about some more injuries, but this time regarding the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Sean Murphy Bunting, we saw him exit the game in the first half against Dallas. He was diagnosed with a dislocated elbow. The Bucs put him on the IR, which we know is a minimum of 3 weeks. When asked about it, head coach Bruce Arians had a very interesting quote that I wanted to get your 2 cents on. The way he put it is that SMB is either going to miss 4 weeks or the rest of the season. Now, between you and me, I don't think there is a chance he misses the entire season. But when Bruce says something like that, like, is he just covering his ass just in case he misses more time than we expect?
I think so. I mean, I don't really expect them to miss the season either. So Bruce Arians is basically saying, oh, like, I thought the quote was super weird.
Right.
He can either come back in 4 weeks, which is going to be basically the minimum time, or he's going to miss the whole season. There's like, yeah, like, okay. Like, that tells me nothing. Like, that literally tells me nothing. I think that was just Bruce's way of trying to get out of the question and not give a specific date. I'm sure they know. Like, they know, like, what. Like, and he said, like, they have to get more stuff done. They're going to figure out in 2 or 3 days. You already know that stuff. Your medical teams are second to none. You already know that stuff. They know what it's looking like. So I think, yeah, like you said, he's just trying to cover all bases, not trying to say, oh, we'll be back in 5 weeks. And then all of a sudden he's back in 8 weeks. And it looks like, you know, Bruce Arians looks like an idiot then.
Yeah.
So I just think he's just trying to cover his butt, and we'll see if, you know, if he does miss the season, you know, maybe that does change the Bucs' plans as far as adding a veteran corner, whether it be a trade at the trade deadline. I actually thought about that today. If Sean Murphy Bunting were to miss the whole season, I think the trade deadline is something, you know, it's rare. It's not like the MLB or NBA trade deadlines where there's a lot of moves. There's not a ton of moves there. But it's possible that a veteran corner could be out there for the taking. Not like Stephon Gilmore or anything, so don't get on that train. I know there's going to be people. But if you were to miss a season, maybe that changes their plans as far as adding a veteran corner. But I don't expect him to miss a season. I think the max is probably 5 or 6 weeks. I'm not a doctor, but I would guess the max is about 5 or 6 weeks.
Now, regarding some updates out of that secondary, the Buccaneers did bring in a veteran corner. While he probably wasn't the veteran corner that people were asking for, it is a very interesting situation. Pierre Desir, I believe his name is. Wanted to get your thoughts on that guy, because he definitely has experience starting, and he even had a couple of picks last year.
They brought in a veteran corner who used to play for the Seattle Seahawks, ladies and gentlemen, Pierre Desir. That's right. Who else did you think?
Yeah.
I don't know anybody. You know, do you think of anybody else? Who were you expecting? Pierre Desir was actually, he played decent. He played for the Colts for a few years, and he played decent there. He's bounced around from team to team a little bit, but he played on the Jets last season and had 3 interceptions, including 1 pick 6. He's, I think, 31 years old. He actually signed with the Seahawks this past offseason, but then ended up getting cut during training camp. So now he's a free agent, and the Bucs signed him to their practice squad. I would suspect if he's able to, you know, if he's able to get the speed on the defense enough, and like the Atlanta offense that's coming up, I would suspect he would be a practice squad elevation guy for this coming week. You're allowed two, so I would suspect he would be a guy, because I would guess the Bucs would rather put a guy like him in over a guy like Dee Delaney if they have to. So it's no guarantee, and because we'll see how ready he's able to be with the playbook and be able to get up the speed on that stuff. But if they were to have an elevation there, I think it would be him. But no Richard Sherman like a lot of people were hoping. I do not believe that is going to be happening.
Yeah. Well, another change in that secondary, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, but safety Andrew Adams was elevated from the practice squad this week, and that's a nice little reunion there, because we know he had ended up signing with the Eagles over the offseason, went and did some special teams work in the preseason. I don't think he landed the role that he entirely wanted over there. Not sure how things didn't work out, but regardless, he is back here in Tampa Bay and is actually counting against the 53-man roster once again. So good for Andrew Adams, but one more update on that secondary before we start to get to these questions. Jordan Whitehead, possibly looking ready to go for week number 2. He definitely looks a lot better this week than he did last week. I know that BA was optimistic coming into the season opener, said that, yeah, there's a really good chance that he'll play, but obviously that injury lingered around a little bit longer than we expected. He wasn't getting the action in practice. He is back at practice now. I know today he wasn't out there in pads, but he was out there moving around, running around, doing stuff. And I believe that the section that is open to the media, he was really only getting special teams work. But you got to feel better about Jordan Whitehead at least being out there and participating, because We saw in week one how depleted this secondary can get, even when you're missing only one or two guys to injury. You know, this is a unit that wanted their props. I think Carlton Davis had a really good game, but beyond your initial starters, there's not a whole lot of comfort in this secondary. So good to see Jordan Whitehead out there. Do you think he's going to be good to go for week two?
I think so, just because, I mean, Bruce Arians said he's like 90% sure that Jordan Whitehead will be able to play. He said that, I think, almost right after the Dallas game. I still believe that if that Dallas game was on Sunday, Jordan Whitehead would have been able to play. I think it's just with it being Thursday and the short week, I just think they didn't want to risk anything. I think he'll play. I think he'll be on a snap count, but I do think he'll play. Now today, you know, Jordan Whitehead not really being doing much. It was a light practice for the entire team today. They weren't even wearing full pads. So nobody was wearing full pads. You know, it's hard to base. It really is hard to judge. We'll see more on Wednesday and Thursday. I think those will be the two. I mean, if he doesn't participate Wednesday or Thursday, then I would guess he's not playing. But I would guess if he's limited, he'll probably be questionable going into the game, but I think he might give it a go.
Yeah, you'd love to see it. Now let's go ahead and get into these questions. This is an assortment of emails. You guys can actually send us an email at any time, cannonfirepodcast@gmail.com. It is not strictly reserved for the mailbag show, but it is definitely appreciated when we need to find some content. We also throw some stuff up on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, all of that, you know, question and answer type stuff occasionally. So go check us out there at Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show. And of course, Buccaneer news as it happens. So let's get to our first question. We will keep the conversation on this secondary because it seems like that's the hot topic this week. I mean, with the injuries and the performance that they had in week one, let's go ahead and break this down and start getting to these questions. J_Maya on Instagram, who also has a YouTube channel, Bucket With You Girl, if you guys want to check her out, gave her a shout out on our community tab and our social media. She is just, you know, getting her channel up off of the ground, so make sure you go check that out. But she brings us this question. Should we be concerned for the secondary if they have a repeat performance against Atlanta? Now, with what we know about Atlanta, I know it's only been 1 week, and it's, you know, week one, the day after, is usually overreaction Monday. But let's talk about Atlanta, and let's talk about the secondary. To answer your question, J. Maya, if the Bucs have a repeat performance against Atlanta, I'm worried about a lot more than just the secondary on that defense, because Atlanta is dog water. And there is no way, in my opinion, that Matt Ryan should be able to move the ball like Dak Prescott was able to do on Thursday night. We talked about how Dak and that receiving core of Dallas is a little bit underrated. That offense is probably going to put up some great numbers this year. I don't see the same for Atlanta. And with that being said, I think if we have a repeat performance against Atlanta and the defense gives up 450 total yards, I'm going to be pretty concerned.
I don't know about a repeat performance. I mean, if it's a repeat, sure. But I do expect Atlanta to get yards, get points. Calvin Ridley's one of the best in the league. Kyle Pitts is still, I know, I was like, you know, oh, Kyle Pitts, whatever. He's unproven, and we know he is. And he wasn't like a big factor, but he still is somebody you have to account for. And Matt Ryan's a veteran quarterback. You know, he's not going to make the dumb mistakes. He might make some mistakes, but he's not going to make them dumb boneheaded mistakes that would really cost you a game.
The avoidable stuff.
Yeah, he's going to take the safe route. He's going to play it safe. He's going to try and put his team in the best position to win. And he's not going to have many turnovers. He's just, you're not. Like the Bucs did not have an interception off of Matt Ryan last year. They won both games, but they did not have an interception off of Matt Ryan. He just doesn't really throw a lot of them. So he's going to take care of the football, I think. But yeah, I mean, if it's a repeat performance, yeah. If it's like the same exact thing, just because the biggest difference is the Cowboys' offensive line is still decent, while the Falcons' offensive line is probably a bottom six or seven unit in the league with a bunch of young players. And I just think the Cowboys had a great game plan, right? But the game plan also helped with their offensive line playing really well. I think even if Atlanta comes out with that same game plan and the Bucs are still playing a little passive, I just think there's going to be some spots where the Bucks pass rush is just going to be able to get there against Atlanta where they couldn't against Dallas. So, yeah, I would be concerned if it was a repeat performance, but I also wouldn't expect a, like, total domination just because Atlanta scored 6 points last week. They're going to be plenty motivated to go out and actually score a touchdown.
Yeah. No, I think if that first half, even if it's a first half where the Falcons are moving the ball pretty easily, I have enough faith that the adjustments made after the half are going to be enough to really slow them down. Because it, in my opinion, I think that's where the Bucks are going to win a lot of their games this year, is the second half. I don't know, man. Like with Atlanta, you know, their offense, Matt Ryan can sling it, but I just do not think that they're going to be able to do a whole lot to this Bucs secondary this week. Even with the, you know, missing Sean Murphy bunting, Ross Cockrell kind of stepping up in there. You don't know if it's going to be Mike Edwards or Jordan Whitehead predominantly, but I just like to believe that if they put up over 400 yards on the secondary, then something is wrong. Because even though Atlanta has an offense that can move the ball, I don't know, man. I don't see something like that happening. So I would definitely be concerned if it's a repeat performance. Let's make that very clear. If it's a repeat performance of what we saw against Dallas, we will be concerned. But I do not think it will come to that point. I don't think Evan thinks it'll come to that point either. But of course, we have to wait and see. And we'll get more information on Atlanta with the game preview a little bit later this week. Now, another question regarding this secondary comes from Josh.Young on Instagram. And this has to do with the Falcons offense. We won't go into too much detail because, like I said, we do have the game preview coming up, but it's worth mentioning. Is the Falcons offense bad, or do we expect a similar pace to last year? Because let's not forget, when the Bucs played in Atlanta, they found themselves in quite the hole in the first half. Luckily, they were playing the Falcons and were able to dig themselves out of it to get the win. But, you know, I talked about not expecting Atlanta to be able to move the ball on us, but let's face it, Matt Ryan finds ways to make it happen, and he usually does, even when Atlanta sucks that year. Their offense is usually pretty okay at moving the football, but what do you think? From what you saw, you know, week one, you really didn't see very much. 6 total points for Atlanta, and Matt Ryan was just, I think I saw a tweet that said, like, Matt Ryan would have been safer in the parking lot that day than he was on the field. What do you think of this Falcons offense? Are they really going to be able to move the ball on us like that?
People forget that, you know, the Falcons put up 27 points in both matchups last year versus the Bucs. So the Falcons also only won 4 games last year, despite having that really good offense. The Falcons offense isn't that bad. It's not as bad as what they showed on Sunday against Philly. It's not.
It's definitely not but as bad as their defense.
But it's also not as good as, like, it's been in years past, just because the offensive line just looks like a complete mess. That's the biggest thing to me. Their offensive line looked awful. I mean, Philly, the strength of their defense is the front 7. You know, but guess what the strength of the Bucs defense is? The front 7. So I just think it really plays into the Bucs' favor there. I'm pretty confident. You people can call me a hater or whatever. I'm pretty confident the Falcons are probably going to score a touchdown on Sunday just because they're an NFL team, and that's what NFL teams do. Like I said, they didn't score. He scored 6 points. I think they're going to score more than 6 points.
Yeah, I don't think the Bucs are going to shut him out by any means.
They're going to score more than 6 points. Okay, the offense still does have talent. It still does have Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage, Kyle Pitts, and like we talked about earlier, Matt Ryan. So we're not really going to get too much into it because that's for later this week. That's for Thursday or Friday, whenever that may be. But I don't think they're that bad. They're not as bad, but they're also, I wouldn't expect the Falcons to drop 30 on the Bucs, but I also wouldn't come out and expect them to, the Bucs will just throw out 3 points. No, I wouldn't expect that. I think it's going to be, the Falcons are going to score points. It won't be near, they won't have nearly the success that Dallas had, but they also won't be nearly as bad as the Falcons were against Philly. So,
and I think it's really important to mention, you kind of touched on it at the little earlier, but the battle of the trenches this week. I know I was all hyped up about, you know, Zach Martin not being ready to go for Dallas in week 1. I
didn't
thought
matter.
I thought these guys were going to eat, but Connor McGovern stepped in there, and you probably couldn't tell the difference between him and their usual all-pro right guard. Dallas has a great offensive line as a unit, aside from just that one Hall of Famer who is on the reserve list that week. Taking a look at Atlanta's offensive line, I'll say it again this week, and I mean it much more than I did last week, because let's just face it, I was wrong when I said this on the game preview a week ago, but there is no reason that our guy should not get to Matt Ryan more than one time, and at the very least, keep him on his ass for the entire game, right? Like, keep him unsteady in the pocket, force him to move around, go through his progressions, extend those plays, get your guys in the secondary in a better playmaking position, or at the very least, hit the damn quarterback, because that's what's going to cause mistakes, that's what's going to cause this offense to stall out, and I think that there is a great chance Tampa Bay is going to be able to do that this week. But that's the huge difference between like Atlanta moving the ball to Dallas moving the ball, because we know Dallas has very talented players at the skill positions, but the offensive line, those are the guys that make their money up front, right? To block for Dak Prescott, you have to be among one of the best. And it's been like that in Dallas for years. And we know that because that's how they played in week one. One more question regarding the secondary, and then we'll move on to some other ones. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, while this is the hot button topic, we get out in front of it and talk about it. Young Cart on Instagram, great username, brings in a question that I think I'm just going to give you the floor for this one, because I feel like you get frustrated with these kinds of people. You already addressed them once in the show, but the people who want Richard Sherman, Stephon Gilmore, these big name corners that kind of aren't realistic and probably wouldn't mesh very well with the culture that this young secondary already has. His question is this: why won't the Bucks look at someone like a Richard Sherman as a vet presence in the secondary, Evan?
Simply because, you know, this isn't Madden, and we're not playing with Monopoly money here.
Well, people said that last year, and then, you know, all of a sudden we get Antonio Brown, so maybe this is Madden for the Bucks team.
For peanuts.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And maybe Richard Sherman would cost peanuts. Maybe. Who knows? But as far as Stephon Gilmore, one, you have to trade for Stephon Gilmore, so you have to give up assets. Two, the only reason that you might be – New England might be trading their number one corner – he wants a new contract. So not only do you have to give up assets, but you also have to pay him the money that you don't have. So are you going to let Carlton Davis walk then and sign Stephon Gilmore? Like, I think people say these things and then they don't think about the repercussions that may happen with them. I'm not saying that a veteran corner doesn't come in, right? We've already seen a veteran corner kind of come in, right? I'm just saying I wouldn't expect it. For one, Richard Sherman isn't what Richard Sherman was 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
Still a good player, but he's not what he was 4 years ago. And Stephon Gilmore is actually injured right now. So, like, you know, the trade deadline, I think, is around week 8. Maybe you see the Bucks hunt for a veteran corner. It's not going to be a guy like Stephon Gilmore. It'll probably be a veteran who probably has an expiring contract and it's just basically a rental that is going to be there to just try and win a championship and to try and help out. If they add one, I still don't believe they're going to add one, because I think Sean Murphy Bunting will be back sometime this season and they're going to roll with the group they have. But yeah, it's just not going to happen. Like I know that we said this about, whenever you say that to people, they say, well, you said that about Tom Brady and you said that about Rob Gronkowski and you said that about Antonio Brown. Are we just going to do that for every single thing now then? You know, are we going to, the Bucks are going to trade for Christian McCaffrey. And then I say, no, they're not.
Got some guys who can't catch out of the backfield. Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette. That's okay. Exactly. Get CMC in there.
Sure.
No problem, right?
No problem with me. No problems with me. like they can say anything and then you say that's not going to happen. They say, well, you also said this wasn't going to happen. And like, can we stop going back to the three outliers in this, right? The three like very specific situations. Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown, especially, were two extremely specific situations. Okay, that like the cards just fell at the right time.
I also want to say and just put on the record for the for the reputation of the podcast, for what little reputation we have around here, I don't think you and I ever said that Brady wasn't coming to Tampa. As soon as the report from Rick Stroud came out that the Bucs are going to pursue Tom Brady, I was like, all right, this is going to happen. I was never one of those people that was in doubt.
You didn't think, like,
I don't think anybody thought it was going to happen.
Right after that report, you didn't think, oh, he's going to be in Tampa. Like,
but I was never on this show banging my chest saying he wasn't going to be here.
Everyone definitely knew that who their target was. Everyone knew, and and we covered it. So you can go back and listen to the few episodes before he signs. You can go back and listen to them; they're available right now. It's not going to happen. It would be nice if you can get Stephon Gilmore for a fifth round pick and then not have to give him a contract extension. Sure. Absolutely.
Pay him more voidable years.
That's not the situation we're in, you know? Yeah, it's going to start to be, the Bucs are going to have some cap issues, like they are. And a move like that is what really hurts you. Obviously, Richard Sherman, it'd be a 1-year deal. It would probably be it wouldn't be for a ton of money. I mean, the season's already started. But at the same time, I don't know. How much does he actually have left? He has some off-field issues right now that haven't been resolved yet. I feel like he would have been signed already, right? Like Josh Norman, who is terrible, was just signed by San Francisco. And Josh Norman is not good. Richard Sherman is better than Josh Norman. But I feel like there's a reason that Richard Sherman is still available.
Do you remember when Josh Norman was the best corner in the NFL for that period of time?
Yeah.
2015.
Carolina. Bucks QBs know that very well.
Yeah, right.
I get it, right? I get it. You always want to, you're looking at the free agent list and you see a name. Right, you see Richard Sherman, and then you're looking, they might trade Stephon Gilmore, the Patriots. It's not realistic, right? It's really, especially the Gilmore stuff, because the Gilmore stuff, you got to give, he wants a new contract.
Yeah, I don't know where people are pulling that out of. I
think it's just because Brady. It's just because Brady was a Patriot, and Brady came to Tampa, and Gronkowski was a Patriot and came to Tampa. They just think that just because Brady's here, that means that every other good Patriots player is just going to follow. And that's not the case.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and get into our next batch of emails. This one comes from Emily Compa, and the tagline is "Experience where it counts." I kind of like the direction this one is heading, and I'm curious to get your thoughts. Hey, guys. Emily Compa here. Correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, but it's mostly Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Brown, and guys like Ryan Succop coming through in the harder games, ? Their leadership and experience is really showing when it's crunch time. As much as I love this team of ours, the way it was before they were acquired was a non-playoff team. I'm not saying we didn't have the pieces to do it, I'm just saying we didn't have the smarts where it counted to break that line between pack your bags and making it to the next level. And this is a really good point, because I think it's important to remember, we talk all the time about the ridiculous talent that Tampa Bay has. That's why Tom Brady chose to come here, because of the talent and the potential that these guys have. But I think with the experience factor that you brought up just there, all of those guys you mentioned, aside from maybe Antonio Brown and Ryan Succop, but I think they could still be grouped into there. These are just veterans who have been there before, right? If anybody can say they've been there before, obviously Tom Brady speaks for himself. Rob Gronkowski has a great resume. Antonio Brown has, while he hasn't gotten a ring before his time in Tampa, he's been around playoff teams. The Pittsburgh Steelers, when they were in their prime with AB, Le'Veon Bell doing their thing, bro, that was ridiculous. A great playoff team. So he's been around that culture before. Ryan Succop, I can't exactly speak for, because I don't know what.
He played on some playoff teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, these guys have been there before, and I think when you look at the Bucs, even though we have all of that talent, Mike Evans, 7 years in the NFL, before Tom Brady came here, had never even sniffed the playoffs. Levante David, one of the best linebackers in the NFL, didn't get his roses because he had never been to the playoffs. He didn't have that postseason experience. He had never been there before. Shaq Barrett, Super Bowl champion, JPP, Super Bowl champion, but some other guys on that defense that you look at, just haven't been there before. And I think building a culture like the Bucs have been trying to do these past 2 years starts with surrounding yourself with guys who have been there before And luckily, with the Buccaneers reaching the top of the mountain, winning a Super Bowl championship, every single person on that roster can now say they've been there before. But I wanted to get your take on what Emily brings to the table. I think it's a great point.
It is a good point. And I think especially in the close games, I think you're starting to see it, right? The close games of what to do, what not to do. And obviously, you know, as time goes on, we'll see it less, because the guys like Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown, Ryan Succop, those guys will stand out less. And you want to know why? Is the rest of the team is experiencing the same thing. So now they know what to do in that situation. Everybody on that roster now, but obviously aside from the rookies and like Giovanni Bernard, every single person is what it takes to win a championship now. Every single one of them, you know, they know what it takes to win a championship, because they did it. And that experience is invaluable, right? So I think, right, you know, especially last year and in games like the last one against Dallas, you really see it. But I think as the games go on, you're going to see those guys like Tom Brady and stuff, not necessarily performance-wise, but like the situational and knowing what to do and being there before. You're going to see that stand out less and less. It'll still be there, but it'll stand out less and less because everybody around them now also knows what to do. Mm-hmm. Everyone, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, they know what to do in a 2-minute drill now, right? Not like they, you know, obviously they knew how to play football before, but like they know how to execute a successful 2-minute drill to go and win the game, which was an issue in Tampa in years past, right? The offensive line, they know what they got to do. The running backs, they know what they got to do. The defense, they know when a big drive is needed to get a big stop, right? To get the big turnover. They now know that. The special teams, they know when, hey, you know, Bradley Pinion knows the people's champ. He knows he's got to pin him down there.
Right.
He's got to pin him. And obviously he's trying to do it every time, but like, it's more situational awareness because these guys are experiencing this.
Exactly.
Every single person on that roster, whether it's a Devin White, Lavonte David, like you said, Lavonte David was the veteran and he'd never been to the playoffs even. No, not one playoff game. And then he wins a championship. So it's an invaluable experience. Thankful for, you know, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, because those guys did bring those types of experiences and situational awareness to the team. But I just think, like I said, I think it's going to be standing out less and less because everybody else is going to have that same exact experience. And now they're going to know how to win. Yeah. They finally know how to win and what it takes to win. And that is the number one key in football.
And it's also not so much about, like you said, you know, they didn't know how to, it's not like they didn't know how to do it before, right? Like Chris Godwin knows how to perform a 2-minute drill. The guys on the offense know what they're doing. The guys on the defense, when they have to make a stop, they know that. But situational awareness combined with like these expectations for yourself as a player, I think is what factors into this. When you've been there before and you know that this is what's expected from you, you're not going to get off of the field unless you meet those expectations. Like if you're on defense and, you know, the Cowboys are driving, let's just say let's flip the situation from the end of the game, right? The Cowboys are driving. They have a 2-minute drill, kick a field goal, they win. The defense knows that the expectation is no points. And, you know, when you have that level of not only communication, but experience, yeah, and just wherewithal that everybody understands each other, that's the expectation. And if you don't meet the expectation, you're probably going to lose a football game.
Yeah, and you know, things don't always go their way. You know, mm-hmm. the defense did give up the field goal, right? In Chicago last year, the Bucs had a 2-minute drill to win the game. Didn't get it done. Not everything's going to work out. You know, you're not going to execute a perfect 2-minute drill every single time you have it, every single time you need it. You're not going to get the defensive stop every single time you need it. You're not going to get the turnover every single time you need it. That's football, right? That just happens. Like, you know, and then not everything is going to go according to plan, but it's so valuable to have that experience to know what moments are big, right? And obviously, you know, but like the winning thing, like, you know, they didn't know how to win. That's a culture thing. They didn't know how to win. You always said, oh, the Bucs are great at finding ways to lose games, and they always seem to find a different way. That is the players not knowing how to win. That's what that is. And now you know what they're doing? They're finding different ways to win football games. Last year, they were down 17-0 at halftime against Atlanta. They won that football game.
Sure, then they did.
You know, then the very next week, blow the doors off of Detroit. That's another way to win the football game. This week, going down, you know, Atlanta, Dallas is an underdog. They're Bucks were heavily favored. It's a bright light game. You know, big. You know, you're opening up the season. You go down, you find a way to win the football game, and that's what they're doing now. That's how I know that this team and the players on this team have finally learned how to win, because beforehand, they didn't know how to win. It would always be something crazy that would happen, whether it be Matt Gay versus the Giants, right? Doing everything else right, missing the kick, losing the game. That's not knowing how to win. You didn't win the game. And it's just it's so nice, and it's such a breath of fresh air to see a football team that finally understands how to get the job done.
Yeah. I mean, one of those crazy ass things that happen, I think, could be grouped into Chris Godwin fumbling on the 2-yard line.
Literally. That would have been it.
That would have been the dagger for any Tampa Bay teams in the past. And I'll wrap it up.
We even thought it was. We were like, oh, like that's – we text each other. We were like, that might do it. Because we were like, that is just so – like 2010 to 2019, that is just so Bucks.
Yeah.
You know, if that touchdown ends the game. But nope, you can't even get a field goal out of it because he fumbles.
One more thing I'll say to wrap this up, and call me biased – call me a Brady fanboy. Maybe it's this part of it coming out of me, but somebody else said it on, I believe, our post-game video. Somebody had commented and said that if you had any other quarterback in the NFL, I don't know if the Buccaneers win this game. And I kind of agree with that statement, only because you think about everything that this Bucs team has gone through over the last season, right? Tom Brady being brought in, changing the culture, Bruce Arians from even his first day in 2019 has been working pretty hard to get this Bucs team where they are right now. And I only say Tom Brady because that's, you know, obviously the quarterback the Bucs chose, and he chose Tampa Bay. But I think it's just the perfect analogy for this situation. You know, Tom Brady, that's why he's on your team. We talked about this way back last April when they signed him. This is why you sign him. Because let's face it, any other quarterback the Bucs have had over the last 10 years, I don't know is going to flawlessly execute a 2-minute drive like that with limited timeouts, mind you, right? And then at the very end of it, he has enough time to throw 3 straight incompletions to run the clock down so the Buccaneers can squeeze as much time left, get out of there, kick the game winner, and go home. I just don't know if that happens with any other quarterback. I know, obviously, you can put Patrick Mahomes in there and say that, yeah, he can do stuff like this. And sure, physically, there's other QBs who can do it. But with the way that this Bucs team has been built and Tom Brady being the catalyst for all of it, I don't know if there's another quarterback who can go in there and do that with these guys. Because we just talk about, you know, the way that he elevates everybody around him. And that's kind of what I think this whole, you know, last 10 minutes have been talking about with Emily's question. But we'll wrap it up with this. I just wanted to, you know, kind of throw that out there, I guess.
the only one you could make the argument for is Mahomes. That's pretty
maybe
much
maybe Aaron Rodgers, but his week one performance was garbage. He's the one who lost me my goddamn fantasy matchup this week, Evan.
Maybe Russell Wilson. Maybe. But like, yeah, Tom Brady, with like if for this particular also – how'd you like that L?
I didn't. Not at all.
We
play. You know, do we play each other again this year or no? Just if we get the playoffs.
I'm not sure. I'll have to check.
Okay.
I will check. So our buddy Fisher, though, he was talking a big game. He got blown out. So.
Oh my God. Did he really?
Yeah. He lost by almost like 40. So Fisher, you got to step it up, buddy. Peloton boy, you got to step it up.
Man.
So, yeah, it's, you know, maybe you can make a case for those guys, but like you said, for this particular situation, it's almost like, you know, kind of perfect, to have that guy. Yeah. And it's exactly right. We've said it a lot, you know, that's why, you know, obviously you bring Tom Brady in technically what you brought Tom Brady in for, he's already done, which
yeah,
is kind of crazy.
Just bring him in for the 2-minute drills. Let me
clear
that part
like,
up.
Like what you brought him in for, he's already done. He's won your world championship. But you also bring him in for moments like that. That's why, you know, That's why you draft someone at number one overall. That's why you draft a quarterback. He is brought there to do that. That is why you get that guy. If you want a basic true two-minute drill when you're going to go 7-10 in a season, sign Andy Dalton, you know. And you what you sign, that's what you'll get. Like, you know, it won't be terrible, but also don't expect anything spectacular. You sign Tom Brady. You draft Jameis Winston at one to try and get moments like that. That's why you do it. That's why the Bengals drafted Joe Burrow at one. The Jaguars drafting Trevor Lawrence at one. You know, the Rams trading for Matthew Stafford, right? The Broncos signing Peyton Manning. That's what you're chasing. And that's exactly what Tom Brady is delivering right now.
Hell yeah, man. Let's go ahead and move on to our final question. And then, of course, we'll close out with Evan's take bag if you have one this week. But this is a bonus question, I guess, also from Emily Compa. But the question more so from her husband, Joseph, who also says hi, by the way. Joseph is the one who got Emily into watching the show. And she said she is extremely happy for that. And she loves the show. So thanks for your question, Emily. Let's go ahead and get to this one. Shifting the topic over to the tight end room. We've had this discussion before, right? I feel like we have it once every 3 months. My husband, Joseph, insists that O.J. Howard should be traded. I say that O.J. will make the difference in some of our games this season and some big catches during crunch time games, but what do you think? Should O.J. Howard be traded? Because obviously he didn't bring very much to this offense week one. A lot of people say that we can do just fine without him, and he has without a doubt been a controversial topic for Bucs fans these past few seasons because of the injury history, not being able to finish out a season, and just the lack of overall production that the Bucs thought they were going to get when they got him at, what, pick number 19?
Yeah. So it's tough because I would say if they're going to trade for a veteran corner, maybe O.J. Howard is a part of that deal. Maybe it's like O.J. Howard and like a fourth-round pick to somebody for a veteran corner.
So you think it's a possibility we could see him traded before the deadline?
It's a possibility if he keeps playing six snaps a game, just like he did against Dallas. I mean, you know, if he's barely out there, you know, like who knows? And he's a free agent after this year. The Bucs, this is his fifth year option year. So the Bucs, he is an unrestricted free agent. So if the Bucs decide, hey, we're probably bringing Gronkowski back, we can just bring back Cameron Bray and just let Howard walk. Why not try and get somebody who can help you in another area at the trade deadline?
Get some more value for it now than you could at the end of the season.
Well, yeah, because obviously at the end of the season, you can't trade him at all. So, you know, and right now his value is even little, which is why you got to package it with a draft pick. But it's just a little sweetener there. So maybe they do determine that. I'm not saying they will. And I think OJ, I still think OJ is a good player. I do, but gotta get on the field, man. Gotta get on the field and limit the mental mistakes. I think that's been a bigger issue than the actual injuries. Even he'll have, you know, some decent plays, but then he'll just have one boneheaded mistake that you're like, can't happen, and it either results in a turnover or it's a key drop or it's a key missed block. He's so close to being so good, but he's not there yet. The Bucs are trying to win now. They can't wait for him to get there. So if they determine by week 6 or 7, like, hey, Howard, they ain't going to work. Let's start, you know, and let's say Sean Murphy Bunting is going to miss a little bit longer, right? Maybe they say, well, we can maybe call this team up who needs a tight end. I might want to take a flyer on a young guy like Howard in their offense, and we can ask for this corner. Maybe something like that happens. That's the only trade scenario I would see. I do believe there has been attempts in the past to trade O.J. Howard. They've always had a pretty high price tag on him. That has not changed. Obviously, now the price tag would be probably a little bit different because of his injury history and stuff. And now him being a free agent after this year and at the trade deadline, you're not going to get a huge deal involving first round picks and this and that. That's more of an offseason thing. But I could see O.J. Howard traded. I don't think it's likely, because I think the Bucs truly want to give him a chance like this whole season. But I could see a world where OJ Howard is traded. It wouldn't be. I really don't think it would be for like just a fifth round pick or something. I think it would be Howard packaged with a draft pick to get somebody that can help right now.
Yeah, and as much as I hate to say this about the guy, because he is my my impact player of the year, comeback player of the year, most improved player of the year.
Yeah, whatever. breakout player of the year.
Whatever. Well,
my breakout player has been off to a great start, Jamel Dean. So.
Hey, at least he's seeing the field, right? I mean, six total snaps.
What would you rather? Not see the field or suck when you're on it?
But I don't think it's a coincidence that we keep talking about this, because it just, like you said, I think it's something the Bucks might have had in their back pocket for a long period of time. Now, has his price tag, according to the rest of the league, steadily gone down over the last 2-3 years? 100%. But also, the Buccaneers have spent all that time kind of waiting around for him to get healthy and potentially do the things that they drafted him to do.
Now,
with what we have seen from Rob Gronkowski, I don't think there's any questions about his health or what kind of shape he is in after week one, putting up damn near 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. We know that Cam Braid is a more than serviceable guy. I think the Buccaneers can fill in that third tight end spot with somebody else that they've had, but it's a shame. It is a shame, but hopefully we'll kind of find out. I think the future of OJ Howard, you brought it up, is a little contingent on the status of Sean Murphy Bunting by the time week 6, week 7 rolls around and that deadline starts to creep up on you, but definitely a very interesting situation to keep an eye on. And if you guys have any comments at all about anything regarding these questions that we were submitted or anything we've talked about on the show today, make sure you leave them down in the comment section below. If you're watching us on YouTube, we will respond to them, probably read them and laugh at them, but we love having you guys comment, and you're a great part of the show. We love having you here. Now, the newest segment on the show that we choose to close every single week with is Evan's Take Bag. And Mr. Wanish, the floor is yours, my friend. There it is.
For the YouTube audience only, you get to see the actual take bag. So
right, every single time we do a take bag, there's like 10 seconds of awkward silence for the audio people, and they're like, what the hell?
If you want to see what the take bag looks like, it's spectacular. Trust me, folks. It is.
Yeah,
it is marvelous.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
It is. If you want to see what it looks like, go ahead and check it out on YouTube.
Oh.
Anyways, not really a whole lot of Buck stuff. I don't think I'm getting Game Pass. They added all 22 back.
Oh, they did? Wow. We got an update, folks.
Well, I don't know, minimal clap, because apparently they changed some stuff and now it's like worse.
Oh no.
So it used to be you're able to jump from, like, you're able to pick a certain play watch. Now apparently you can't do that anymore.
You just have to watch the whole game and then rewind.
Like you can skip ahead or anything, like you can do that, but like, yeah, you can't pick a particular play. Some people have reported like they're watching film, there'll just be like a black line right in the middle of when they're watching it. I'm like, yeah, I'm not. And a lot of people are like, yeah, it looks like I just wasted $100. So I was like, yeah, I'm not.
Oh, man.
So I will not be getting, until things, some things change with all 22, I will not be getting that. That sounds brutal. Yeah. So for first off, you don't even have all 22 to start the season. And then once you do get it, you take some stuff away and like, come on. Like, are you kidding me?
Sounds like Madden, honestly. I mean, I don't know how much experience you have with them taking features out of Madden, but they tend to do that after, you know, telling you it's going to get better for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation before about Madden, but I mean, they, you know, Rhett gets really, really angry about Madden. He takes his video games, sports video games, particularly Madden.
Listen, buddy, if you don't, I'm just here to tell you right now, just as a little disclaimer to anybody who's listened to the podcast up until this point, we deserve better. EA Sports should not be the exclusive license holder for the NFL and video games. I believe other companies should be allowed to produce 11-on-11 simulation football, because the last time that happened, EA Sports had to buy out the competition because they knew they were going to get their ass whooped, because to this day, ESPN NFL 2K5, a game that was only $20 at launch, is still better than Madden 22. I think the expectation should be raised, and I think we deserve better as football gamers, because I'm tired of playing an almost 20-year-old video game if I want my simulation fix, Evan. That's why I'm upset, and that's why I get so angry about it.
When's the last Madden you bought?
The last Madden I bought was Madden 18. I got it at the midnight release at my local GameStop. I got the GOAT edition. Got my Mutt team rolling very early and then got bored because I don't like Ultimate Team. It's too much of a grind unless you spend money. And I played through long shot mode because I think that was what 18 was the first year they had long shot.
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah. So. And like there wasn't very much special about it. I remember I kind of enjoyed it because I played online. I played the hell out of Madden 16 and 17. Like, I think you remember my Madden phase. I had Madden highlight videos. But I mean, even in the grand scheme of things, as much as I enjoyed those games competitively, I go back and I play them now, and it's like, this isn't simulation football. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't animation-based football can work to a degree, but not in the way that Madden tries to present itself. And, you know, I can go back and play Madden 16, and I feel like I'm playing the exact same game as Madden 21 or 22 on next-gen even. Like, it just, for me, you know, I know the technology was very different, but when I was growing up, like, I went from Madden 03 to 04, and I remember 05 came around, they introduced the hit stick, right? That was a huge deal. I remember Madden 06 came around, they introduced the QB vision cone. That was kind of a big deal, even though I didn't use it. It was still a cool new feature. Every single year, their franchise got better. I don't know if you played the old PS2 Madden franchises, but they used to have something called the Tony Bruno Show. And Tony Bruno would do a weekly radio show talking about players negotiating for contracts, who won big that week, who got their ass kicked. Like, I remember he talked about Michael Strahan was negotiating with the Giants for to be the highest paid NFL defensive player at the time. And, you know, training camp is coming up and we're just going to have to see what happens. But he's ready to play no matter what. Like, these are all things that I remember from my gameplay experience because I couldn't find it in other games. And then Madden nowadays, bro, like, I've played franchise mode from Madden 18. I played it in 19. I didn't play Madden 20. I skipped that one. I have been playing Madden 21 on next gen. Madden 22, I've played franchise and all those. And it's just, it's the same thing. Like Madden 22, didn't they just promote and tout that you can sign assistant coaches again, even though they're not licensed assistant coaches? Bro, back in Madden 06 and 07 in franchise mode, you could sign whoever the hell you wanted to be your offensive and defensive coordinator. All licensed names, all different playbooks, all had different effects on your team. Let me wrap up this rant by saying this, because I've been going on for way too long about football video games, but like, the expectation for Madden is just so low that it's insulting to the player base and the people who still legitimately care about Madden. Like, they are just consistently made fools of. I don't know if you watched Lil Dicky and Marshawn Lynch play Madden 22, Cowboys versus the Bucks, but there is a blatant edit in the video where Marshawn Lynch got tackled as Leonard Fournette laid down on his back and then, like, stood back up, broke the tackle, and then the play was whistled dead. And in the broadcast, there is just this awkward-ass edit where they black the screen out, and then they show Marshawn Lynch's reaction. They show the girl who was hosting it, whose name I forget right now, but she said something, and then boom, we move on. Like, nothing ever happened. I think they just think we're idiots, and we deserve better from our video games, because if you look at the state of every other sports video game right now. I don't know why 2K players complain the way that they do. Have you seen the depth in those games, bro? Like, come on, dude. Let me take a deep breath. Let me step down off of my soapbox. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for, you know, I know you're listening to a Buccaneers podcast, but we had to, it's the very end of the show, right? It's the take back. There's my contribution. There you go. Madden sucks, and it will be trash until EA is no longer the exclusive rights holder of NFL football, of NFL video games. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you needed to take a drink after that.
Yeah, I did need a sip of my drink, yeah.
That was like four straight minutes of just,
I could go for 30. I could probably start another podcast just talking shit on Madden every single week.
Oh, man. Well, I guess the last thing about the mailbags would be pretty quick. don't worry about Mike Evans. Whatever. Like,
oh, yeah.
I saw a lot of people freaking out. He had more catches and more yards in this game than he did in week one in New Orleans last year. Still got 1,000 yards. Relax. Okay? Chill out. He had one catch for 2 yards in New Orleans last year. Yes, it was a touchdown, but it's one catch for 2 yards. This year, He had three catches for 24 yards. Relax.
Three times the production already, man.
He's gonna get his. Relax. That ends it. That's we got a bonus because we also got Rhett's whole. I mean, just Rhett basically a breakdown of the entire Madden franchise.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
No reason to be sorry, but like, whew, man, we should call it like the Madden minute or something.
I might take that clip and turn it into something else. Cause like, yeah, dude, I could go on all day about Madden. And there's other YouTube channels that do, if you guys want to check it out. I think Ryan Moody is one, Ryan Moody 21. Set the Edge, just talked about it before. Sports Drink TV does a lot of videos about the decline of the Madden franchise. If you have the spare time and you're interested in stuff like that, make sure you go check it out, because those guys do a way better job of breaking it down than I could. But the state that NFL gaming is in nowadays is in shambles, and I do think that we deserve better. One more thing I will say regarding the Mike Evans tidbit, I like that you brought that up, because I know that like even I was asking myself after that first game, like Mike kind of looked out of it. And I will say that some of the targets he did get, he did kind of look not entirely ready, but also let's just chop that up to week one football, right? Mike Evans is going to get his this season. There are going to be games where the defensive coordinator for whatever team they're about to go up against probably spent a lot more time in film talking about how to slow down guys like Antonio Brown and Chris Godwin.
Yes.
To where Mike Evans isn't going to have 2 to 3 guys on him the entire game. Because it seems like most of the times when we see Mike Evans...
He's double teamed every play.
Exactly. Whenever we talk about Mike Evans not having a huge day, it's because there were just guys on him the entire game. So hopefully...
Yeah. There will be games where Chris Godwin has 3 catches for 20 yards. Like, there will be games where Antonio Brown, you don't even remember if Antonio Brown played. Like, there will be games where Rob Gronkowski doesn't have a catch. Like, those games will happen. It's just the nature of the beast. And when you have a high-powered offense like that, only one football and there's only 4 quarters, so...
Yeah, very, very true. But ladies and gentlemen, that's just about going to do it for this week's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast. Thank you to every single person who sent in questions, takes, whatever it may be regarding the Cannon Fire mailbag. Looking forward to this to be a pretty regular part of the show as we get back to 3 shows a week here in the regular season. We will talk to you guys a little bit later this week. Now, I know at this point you guys probably think we have commitment issues as far as the schedule goes, and that's just because of my day job. It kind of ruins any planning that I might have for my schedule that week. But either Thursday or Friday, for sure, like it's going to be one of those 2 days, I promise you. It's not going to be Saturday. It's not even going to be tomorrow, Wednesday. Thursday or Friday, we're going to be back on our game preview show. We might even have a special guest with us. Who knows? But we will talk to you guys more about the upcoming matchup with the Atlanta Falcons. And we'll break down all the latest news at that time. Make sure you follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show. And of course, Buccaneer news as it happens. Speaking of Bucs news as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram at Bucs_daily, the number one Buccaneers fan page on Instagram. Rapidly approaching 30,000 followers. You can also find Evan on Twitter at EvanNFL, where he will not follow you back. But I'll tell you who will. That's myself. Instagram and Twitter at Redicus, RHETTAKUS. If you follow me, I will follow you back. Let's chop it up. Let's talk some Bucks. I am down whenever. Hell, send me a tweet about Madden, right? If you have any thoughts about the state of Madden, leave them in the comments down below. Send me a tweet. We'll talk about it. That's what we're here for, right? Thank you to everybody who checked out the show this week, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast, brought to you by our good friends over at betonline.ag. I am your host, as always, Rhett Matthews, signing off for my co-host, Evan Wanish, and like I said, we'll talk to you guys a little bit later this week for our game preview show. Excited to get to it. We'll talk to you next time. Until then, and as always, go Bucks.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.